I'm Priya Volchi.
I'm Winona Guo.
We're the co-founders of Choose and co-authors of Tell Me Who You Are.
And this is Two Dope Teachers and a Mic.
Yeah.
What'd y'all have for breakfast today?
I had Ensure protein shake.
Ensure protein shake.
Ensure protein shake.
Yeah.
I wanted to be like extra bougie when I came here, so okay. I was gonna get a Starbucks, and I had a Starbucks, and I just got like this new drink that I really like, and it's the iced latte with two pumps of toffee nut. Mm. And my friend totally like two pumps of toffee nut.
Okay.
And
is that something you have to have customized, or is it just two pumps?
Well, you get two pumps of vanilla, and that's what makes it the vanilla iced latte.
Oh,
and then
you
put the two pumps of toffee nut, so it doesn't taste too much like coffee.
Wait, so this was your breakfast?
Yes. I've been eating eating good, but like kind of bad. Like my aunt made red chili and mashed potatoes, and I've been eating red chili and mashed potatoes for breakfast for like the past 2 days.
Okay, I mean, there's worse things.
You know,
breakfast.
you have a vegetable, you got the meat, you know?
Yep.
We're good to go.
So as college students, what's the minimum that you just need to get into your body in order to function in the morning?
Oh my gosh.
Like the minimum.
Honestly, water.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that necessity or is that like what you can actually do?
What I can actually do. Just
okay.
More so because like college kind of stresses me out. So like I just stress so out, like I can't eat anymore, if that makes sense.
There you go.
So yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, sorry, yeah. Okay, and how about you, Sophia?
I know this sounds like really crazy, but I feel like I eat breakfast more consistently in college than I have any other time in my life.
Really?
And yeah, I will go in there and get like a full breakfast. Smith is really famous for their chocolate croissants. So like chocolate croissants day, I'd be in there eating my croissants. And also my friends from LA really got me into this one like breakfast thing that I was like so about at first, but it's basically just a hard boiled egg and then you put lemon and salt on it.
Oh.
And it sounds weird.
No, it actually sounds pretty good.
But it's delicious, so I would eat that a lot.
I never thought about doing the lemon. Like,
you know, it sounds really different, but, you know, my friends from LA just have me eating different. And also, Smith has, like, a million milk choices. They have, like, regular milk, like, 2% almond milk, soy milk, oat milk. Like, they have it all.
Do they do hemp milk?
They don't do that.
I don't know if they're allowed.
They have chocolate milk. You know, honestly, you know,
it's a thing.
They just legalized marijuana in Massachusetts, so who knows?
Oh, I didn't say marijuana.
Oh, hemp. But they did legalize it.
I didn't eat breakfast, which is funny because I made breakfast for my entire family and then drove away from the house. I got coffee and a croissant. It was almond croissant. From my school, and they are here, brilliant, powerful women of color who are up in that next level in higher education. How y'all doing?
Doing
good.
Hello.
Doing good?
Hello.
All right.
Hello.
It's so good. Y'all bring such a good energy. Like, such a good energy. It just feels really good. And I have to tell you, it's been a really hard week for me. And I feel like the universe is just like trying to make me feel better by bringing y'all around this week, and so it just means a lot. Today, we're gonna talk a little bit about an issue that a lot of us in schools often don't spend enough time talking about. We are focused on our students being college ready. We're focused on our students being able to graduate and having opportunities for higher education. But then it's kind of anyone's guess what happens next. And I don't have to tell you, Two Dope Nation, that oftentimes for our young men and women of color, college can be a really unforgiving and hostile environment, and many of us don't finish. I've got two superstars in front of me who are no doubt going to finish. This is like I feel like college for y'all is like the equivalent of middle school. You're like, I'm obviously going to go to high school, which is grad school, right? And I just think that, I don't know, like, I don't think it's a question, and I think that your stories are going to be really inspirational and optimistic in a way, but also real, because knowing both of you, I feel like y'all don't do well with not real. Like, you are honest, and you're upfront, and you're direct. You want to introduce yourselves?
Yeah, so this is Sophia. I graduated DCIS class of 2017, and now I am currently a junior at Smith College.
My name is Ampa'o. I was also class of 2017. I am a film studies major at Mount Holyoke College.
Right. So I want to get right into it. You both attend women's colleges.
Yes.
And off mic, you indicated that women's colleges tend to be very white.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your experience been as... And I should say, y'all are like women of color who actually live as women of color, right? Mm. So this has been an intentional part of your identity for most of the time that I've known you. How are you living that life as young women scholars of color in an area that's predominantly white?
Do you want the admission answer or do you want the real answer?
Tudope Nation is all about real stories. All about real stories.
Lay it down.
And you know, obviously, it's always going to be a mixed bag, right? There's always going to be positives and negatives. But yeah, be real with it.
I think,
lay it down, like Sophia said.
I think for me, there's like two sides. Like personally, since I identify as biracial, so being both black and native, like I always thought of my identity as twos, which I really don't think anymore because it really fractures who I am. But whatever, that's the side thing. Going to college at Mount Holyoke, there's not a big native community there, which is like significantly different than DCIS, which it had like a bigger native population. I had native peers. I was able to take Lakota. Like I felt empowered and enriched in my native identity and not so much in my black identity. Well, in college it completely switched. Like I have so many black friends, and I know this sounds so corny, but like in high school I didn't have that.
It's not
that.
Corny when a person who identifies as part black says they have black friends.
Yeah, it just felt really great to have that side, but like it's lacking in such a native community, and I realized that like coming to a PWI, especially during first contact, Massachusetts of native identity, and like we're struggling for land acknowledgement, and like that's the bare minimum for native.
What's a PWI? I'm gonna feel stupid. I feel like you're gonna explain it and be like, oh yeah, I've heard of that.
Predominantly white institution. So
oh
yeah.
Okay, I do know what those are.
I would like to clarify that technically we should be calling them historically women's colleges.
Yes, historically.
Because we don't want to discriminate or exclude LGBTQ folks.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
And right. It is not a girls' school. Don't call it a girls' school.
Yeah.
Well, because it's women. It's grown women.
I know, but people will be like, oh, that's a girls' school, right? I'm like, no.
Well, as long as you can say, like, what's a men's college that you could call a boys' college? Like,
right.
You know,
yeah.
They would never say that.
I also like the distinction between predominantly and historically, because I think predominantly also sends a message that this is how it is, as opposed to historically, which indicates this is what it has been, but it doesn't.
Right.
It's not a permanent state of things. And
right.
I think that's also an important distinction.
Right.
Okay, cool. I feel like I cut you off though. You were talking about so people. Kind of having. Being able to connect with more black students at the school, but still feeling kind of the invisibility of indigenous people in higher education.
Yeah, and it's just like...
Especially in Massachusetts, that's impressive. That, you know? That there's still invisibility in a place where there's such a vibrant, set of societies and world.
Like, I think... I lost my train of thought.
That's okay. Genocide will do that, right?
But oh.
Man,
yeah.
Like, what I was thinking about. Sophia, how about you?
Wow. Okay, so being at DCS, I was the president of LSA, Latino Student Alliance. And, you know, I thought here I was. Like, I knew who I was. I had my identity. I'm a proud Latina woman. You know, this whole thing. Like, I thought I had it all figured out. But... honestly, I was very, very nervous to go to the East Coast because I knew that a lot of the Latinx community there was going to be majority like Puerto Rican or Dominican or like South American, which I had not really had a lot of exposure to being in Colorado.
I know in Colorado it feels like everybody's Mexican.
Yeah.
<It's> like, wait, so is Salvadoran a different kind of Mexican?
pretty much. Yeah. And I found it so interesting because I ended up making a lot of other friends who identified as Latinx from Texas, from California, from Florida, and we kind of all just like came together, and for the first time I definitely felt a lot more accepted, and it was kind of a out of body experience because I was like, here I am, kind of like my guard up, like nervous, like how am I gonna fit in, whatever, but they were very, very welcoming, and they were kind of in the same place too, you know, like, oh, my Spanish isn't perfect, oh, you know, like I've never been back to Mexico, you know, and I was not expecting that at all whatsoever. Yeah. But I also feel like it was a really good learning experience for me too, and kind of understanding like different parts of the Latinx community, like Puerto Ricans and Dominicans. Yep. And for most of you who don't know, Massachusetts in particular, Holyoke, Massachusetts, has the largest population of Puerto Ricans in all of the United States.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh,
and when I was at Smith, I was a part of, or I am a part of, LASO, which is Latin American Student Organization, formerly known as Nosotras. We had like a whole thing about like gender and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And also just using Spanish and who can be considered Latino, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a whole nother story. But yeah, I found it very interesting because it's like, here we are in Western Massachusetts. There's this huge population of Latinos and Spanish speakers like right next door, and that disconnect was so interesting because it's like, here we are kind of like craving that culture, like craving that connection, and the school that we were at didn't necessarily provide us with the information that like, hey, there's like communities that we can be involved in, that we can interact with. And so I think that was one of the big learning points while I was at Smith.
You're already thinking about the next step.
I've kind of been taking a little bit of a sabbatical this junior year.
While still being in class.
We continue to learn. But last semester I was in Shanghai. This semester I have a concentration in sustainable food, and so I'm going to be in Ecuador, Malawi, and Italy doing a special study abroad experience. And shout out to DCIS for like making me feel like I could travel like that. But yeah, so I haven't been at Smith for a while.
Yeah, that's fine. You're a Smith student.
I'm a Smith student.
Just haven't been on campus.
Been on campus for like a whole year.
Yeah. That's impressive. So I have a quick question. Something that I reflect on, having been mainly a high school teacher for the last 21 years, is, so we have a diverse student body in our school and in the city of Denver. Our school, I think, is actually, and I think it always has been, almost a direct representation of overall demographics of Denver. I feel like it's like, you know, you talk about schools that historically serve communities of color in the city of Denver, and they tend to be in specific neighborhoods and tend to be overwhelmingly one or two groups.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in the far northeast, it's going to be a lot of black and brown students. If you're in the southwest, it's going to be a lot of Latinx and Asian students. And so the diversity of the district isn't necessarily playing out in specific schools, but I feel like this is a school that does that.
Mm-hmm.
I always wonder about some of the emphasis I put on racial and cultural identity and being in this multicultural environment. I wonder sometimes if it's because it's not the real world of college. Like, you go from this area of comfort, which I think, Ampo, you indicated, to this area where it is historically white.
Mm-hmm.
How should we be thinking about that jump for students of color into higher education, which is still historically very overwhelmingly white students? Like, should we work harder to get y'all, like, ready for white culture? Or, like, what should we be doing?
I feel like, from like my experience, like working specifically in college readiness, it's just like preparing you mentally to interact with white culture in such a manner. Like, I think imposter syndrome, like, that's always been brought up, but like, even every year I still feel it, and like, I feel less than my peers, and I'm just like, even though I've had all this access to what I need to do prepare for college and stuff, I still feel it. And like, I think that's my only solution right now, because I don't know.
We think that, like, our listeners are pretty aware and educated, but could you talk a little bit about what imposter syndrome is and how you know if you have it?
I guess how, it may not be the correct definition, but, like, what I understood it as is imposter syndrome is, like, when a student of color goes into a white space and doesn't feel less enough, even though they got there on their own merit, their own terms, and then they're basically on the same level as the white peers.
We have air quotes. You can't see those on the show.
Yeah, air quote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we have our YouTube channel, you'll be able to see the air quotes.
So
in other words, imposter syndrome is this feeling that you don't belong there, you're not qualified to be there, and that somehow you have tricked people into thinking that you belong there.
Yeah.
Even though if you were to sit down and write down your qualifications on paper, you would have a lot of the same qualifications and abilities as your peers.
I guess something I also thought about is, like, I have to really recognize my privilege and being prepared for college because I had access to so much stuff. And, like, especially at DCIS, and, like, if you didn't have that, like, if you weren't constantly searching out, if you already didn't have the teachers who would push you in the right direction, if that makes sense, like sending you the resources, I feel like going to college could be such a mind, what's the word? That's not the F word. a mind freeze. Something along with it. Something to boggle your mind.
Yes, a mind-boggling.
A mind-boggling. Yeah.
They know we can't edit profanity. Sorry. At some point we'll get there, but we're not there yet.
Yeah.
I want to point out it's 11:53. Adams is not here yet. So.
Okay.
His phone probably died. or he's avoiding me like he usually does.
I would probably have to say the same thing about imposter syndrome. Tongue-tied. And I would also have to say I feel the same way in terms of, like, feeling super prepared my senior year and, like, I got this, like, I'm on the same level. And then I remember one of my first classes, it was Intro to Gov. I'm a Gov major, by the way. So it was a whole bunch of first years. And just the way that people were talking, I was like, I'm nervous. In high school, I was always, like, the first to raise my hand. I always knew what to say.
Having had Sophia in class since she was a sixth grader, I can confirm that this is true.
I was, like, the annoying, I feel bad. I was
not annoying,
like,
not annoying, not annoying.
But it was, like, the first time where I was like, oh, crap. Like,
I'm not the only one with something to say.
I'm not the only one with something to say. These people have taken classes that weren't even offered at my school. They have read books or watched movies that, like, we didn't even have access to or I didn't even know existed.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, yeah, well, didn't you take that when you were taking AP, blah, blah, blah? And I was like,
Didn't
even have that class. And it was just kind of, like Ampa was saying, kind of mind-boggling for me because here I am. Both of my parents went to college. Yes, I am a student of color, but, like, even then, I was still like, I don't know what's going on.
So even as a person of, like, relative privilege, right, where you have both parents who are working, educated professionals, knowing them personally, I also know that they're, like, loving, supportive, serious people about, like, their household and where their kids are going in life.
Mm-hmm.
Even with those things, you still felt a pinch of privilege when you arrived on campus.
Yeah, it was definitely wild. And honestly, I feel like it wasn't even until, like, my sophomore year of college where I felt comfortable, like, interacting in class and, like, not feeling I was going to say, like, the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I did not expect that I was going to feel imposter syndrome so much. But it's, like, a very real thing. And it's also kind of scary, too, because here you are, like, a little, like, 18-year-old in classes with, like, 20-somethings, and you're just, like...
You spent the last, like, couple of years of high school hearing all these great things about yourself.
Yeah.
Just feeling good. You're like, I'm a star.
And then I'm also just, like, okay, now that I am a junior in college and kind of, like, hearing what other people have been doing or their college experience, I'm just, like, thank God I went to the college that I did, and I totally support liberal arts colleges or wherever you want to go, but definitely liberal arts colleges, because I was like, if I did not have that support or that small community, especially coming from DCIS, I really benefited from that, and in college as well, totally benefited from that, because professors were actually able to check in with me and I was able to, like, come to them, and I was just like, man, if I had gone to, like, a big public university, I don't know how I would have fit in, or if I would have just been, like, a number. Yeah. And I probably would have been fine, but definitely not had the same attention or the same support that I do have now.
There's a difference between fine and thriving, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's a big thing. So a couple of things kind of occur to me as you share this story. I had the opportunity in May of 2018 to go to Chicago. Kevin and I went to the Journey for Justice conference that they have every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and they're shout out to J4J. They're incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the presentations was around academic inequities that exist in schools, where, just as you say, that you went to a school that really gave you a lot of opportunity to learn, and yet when you got to college, you had more privileged, like, classmates who just had access to more classes.
Yeah.
One of the findings of recent research is that the more course offerings there are in your school, the more likely your students are to find their niche, find their passion, be prepared for college and get there and feel like they belong there. Mm-hmm. And one of the graphics they showed was a comparison of all the classes offered at Cherry Creek High School and all the classes offered at Manual High School. I would venture to say that Cherry Creek offers more classes to its freshmen than what Manual offers to all of its students. And these are systemic structural inequities. So policymakers, all y'all who listen, which is like none of them, but all y'all who listen, the first thing you can do is make sure the kids have access to classes. They're going to feel like they belong at the next step. Apo, you looked like you wanted to say something.
Oh, no, I'm just deep in thought.
Deep in thought. That's good. That's good. It's a meditative episode we got going on here. Let me ask you another question. So looking back, as you kind of reflect on your high school experience, it wasn't that long ago. 3 years ago, graduated almost, right?
Yeah.
It feels like it's been that long.
A long time, but not a long time.
See, this is the funny thing, y'all. So please spread the word to your peers that when they visit the school and I don't seem like I don't have a big reaction, it's because in my own mind, y'all haven't left. Like it's not weird to see you in the hallway. It's like, oh, look, there's Ampo and Sophia. Wait, they don't go. Oh, my God, they're here. So, like, tell them not to take it personally if I don't seem that surprised.
Got it.
Because, like, I don't know, to me, like, you're still my students, even if I'm not teaching you anything right now. But looking back, what are the types of things that you wish had been available to you as high schoolers? What are some things you wished your teachers, the leadership in your school, had understood about you and your peers now that you're at this next level and you're like past the halfway point of your college education?
What do we wish?
Yeah, like, what do you wish that we had known, or what do you wish we had done, or ways that adults in schools can just help you like get to this level where you feel confident enough to go to this environment and thrive there?
Okay, can I go first?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I would have 2 points. One is an academic one, and then one is just like a personal, like social thing.
Yeah.
Okay, number one, academic. I remember I took a first year seminar, and it was like on opera literature, super random.
Oh, that is really
yeah. Cool. It was
That's
like
a very specific.
It was an interesting class, but you know, we were out there, and actually it ended up being one of my favorite classes that I've taken thus far. But I remember I was like, oh yeah, I totally did passages. You know, I took AP classes. I know how to write an essay. And I remember that that first class, we were supposed to write like four page essays on different operas. And I thought my writing was good, and the professor was literally like, this is, in an academic way, this is trash, and do you not know how to write a thesis? Yeah, pretty much. And I was like, whoa. My whole life, I thought I knew how to write, and now I don't. And I wish teachers in high school had taught me more how to write in a college level instead of always to a test, because I feel like my writing was very like test-based and very simple, and it wasn't as like thoughtful and kind of like a college level in that way.
So you weren't like intellectually engaged. You were engaging with a prompt and kind of responding to the prompt, but not really engaging fully intellectually.
Yeah, and I'm just going to wrap it up here. Probably personal. I thought that my mental health was totally fine going into college, and I thought I knew myself and having that relationship with myself, but I wish I had had more practice kind of like checking in with myself and also like how to maintain a healthy sense of like confidence and like personal health, not just like physically but also mentally. I didn't really have a lot of practice with that, and I felt like my first year of college, I did a lot of things that, looking back, I probably shouldn't have done, but it's because I didn't know.
Right.
And it's stuff that I was a little too uncomfortable
to
talk about. Yeah, talk about with my parents, where I feel like a teacher, kind of like that third party, could have kind of told me, like, this is what you do. Like, and people kind of talk about it, but no one really talks about, like, the, you know, like, the drug culture, the alcohol culture, like, what that's going to be like. Even, like, dating. There was definitely some unhealthy situations that you put yourself in or that other friends are in, and you don't necessarily know how to deal with them because, you know, you're thousands of miles away. You're in a totally different state. And, you know, you have so much freedom, but it's also kind of scary, too, at the same time.
Yeah.
So
I think that's a really powerful thing, like, because I think as we start understanding the ramifications of poor mental health supports, you know, the narrative feels like we don't have time to talk about this in school. Like, we don't prioritize this. Like, mm-hmm. your priority is where you invest funds and resources and time. Mm-hmm. And we just don't have that.
I guess the one thing I think that I really benefit from my college classes is the seminar discussions. But I was trying to think, like, the past couple minutes, I was just like, what classes in high school did I benefit the most from? And it was from Mr. Munoz and Ms. FD. But I think it's because you encouraged the discussions that we had, because I think having those mental brainstorms for me just brings, ignites so much passion, and I'm able to, like, orally or see it auditorily, however you say it, and, like, I'm more of that learner, so, like, seminar discussions in college, I love it.
Yeah, so much of it is dialogue-based, and so you would say more opportunities for dialogue in classes, and it sounds like putting your ideas together, that can be academic or not academic, it can be those kinds of things. Yeah, I relate to the writing thing, because when I went to college, I had the same mindset that you did. People had always told me I was a gifted writer, and you're such a good writer, you're great. And
I then, did my passage, I thought I had it in
class. Yeah, exactly. I'm going to shout out Professor Bruce Bassoff, my composition professor my second year at CU, who hated my writing, and therefore I hated him for a really long time, and now we're like dear friends because... I saw an opportunity to learn from him. But yeah, that was definitely something that I can relate to. So it's 12:03. I have to get ready for class. anything else y'all want to say before you get out of here? The room's different, isn't it?
Yeah, the room is different.
Yeah, it's different. I've actually tried to organize it a little bit. It's like horrible right now, but there's a method to this madness. Hi, Amina. Did you leave a phone here? I don't
know.
I didn't see one.
As
you can tell, we're in a real school.
I would probably just have to say, I hope that if there's seniors out there or like juniors, especially when you're looking into the college admission process, you know, really pick a school or look into schools that are going to support you. Little backstory here, but my first year of college, the second semester, I had three family members die really unexpectedly, and the support that I got from my school was amazing. They literally paid for a flight back home, and my teachers were so much more understanding than I ever could have expected, and just like the friends there. And granted, at every institution there's going to be pros and cons, and there's always going to be ways in which they can improve. However, the relationships that I've had at Smith, and just like, okay, I'm a plug women's colleges right here, but just women's colleges in general, and that relationship that you have and that space that you have to kind of like grow and focus on yourself in an intellectual space and also a very comforting space has been bar none one of the reasons why I'm doing what I'm doing and have been able to bounce back from times where my mental health wasn't that great. Yeah, I cannot talk enough about just
that's amazing. Well, and it's
the
such,
support I've had.
It's such an important counter narrative to what we think college does and what a lot of colleges do, where it's a numbers game.
Yeah,
it's a keep our enrollment really high, keep that tuition rolling in, reify, alienate students, make sure they're producing, and you know, if they're not able to finish in 4 years, that's great because we can rack in more tuition dollars. And what you are describing is something that suggests to us that there's humanity in higher education in some
And areas. I would just say, like, liberal arts in general, just the way that it's focused on having intellectual conversations, not even women's colleges, but intellectual conversations, smaller class sizes, really just a place where you feel like you can grow and thrive and also learn in an environment that's going to have a lot of different perspectives. Even though it's kind of scary to, like, leave your state or, like, leave your community, I would totally find a place that really fits for you because... You know, you're going to be there for 4 years, which feels like a long time, but it goes by so fast. And it's really important to be in a place where you know that you, like, you want to be there. Because no matter what the highs and lows are, like, at least you're in a place that you know you're like, I'm here and I'm happy to be here.
That's awesome.
I guess my advice would be, I think, looking forward, I would emphasize if you look at like the cultural community, the diversity breakdown, to see if like they have really strong support. Because I realize at my school, like a lot of my work is like based on trying to make sure there's an Indigenous voice on campus. We're creating an Indigenous org. We're working with the president, etc.
Yeah.
It's a lot of like fire trailblazing work, and I think if you don't have the emotional energy, I think I would best work like within a community that can fully support you, that has the resources, or else it can be really emotionally exhausting.
And it helps you like renew that emotional energy, right?
Yeah.
Because you're gonna be running on fumes at various times. But are you
I've
in a place
definitely
where
been
you
running on fumes?
But are you in a place where you can experience renewal as well?
Yeah. Mm. I personally, I think yes.
Yeah.
But I feel like it can go like yo-yoing sometimes,
where it's
a lot of emotional energy, being one of the few Native students on campus, getting tokenized a lot.
Yeah.
We're doing a lot of work, and
you have to be
the
expert on every experience that every Native person has ever had in this country.
Got to know 500 cultures, languages,
like,
you know.
But you got this.
Yeah,
no,
got
kidding.
It.
And that always like is amazing to me, because I just kind of feel like telling people, you know, there's Google. You can actually like look up things and not expect me to kind of provide your education for you, and you won't feel so dumb.
Right?
Y'all, thanks for doing this.
Yeah,
this
thank you
so,
so much.
Amazing.
I always wanted to do this.
Yeah, no, hey, we'll have to have you on again, because I think some of the work that you're both doing really fits into the mission of the show and what we're trying to build here.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we have a way. Have you, you've listened to the show?
Not in a while.
It's all good. Check out our Revolutionaries mixtape from this summer, where we talked to everybody from Boots Riley to Dinah Seeley to we talked to Boots.
Wow.
Boots is the dopest. So many cool people. So what we do is I announce our social media platforms. We are Two Dope Teachers and a Mic, minus Kev today. We can be followed on Instagram and Twitter at Two Dope Teachers. We generally respond to things if you post to us, and if you add us on Twitter and you don't follow us, you're not going to get a response. That's just not how it works. We're on Facebook for your grandparents who want to follow. Also, your parents, I guess, are probably active on Facebook. I'm not as active as I used to be.
Uh-huh.
But we're on Facebook. Find us at Tudo Teachers. Like us. If you are listening to us through Apple Podcasts, please leave us a 5-star review and a rating. We have a few out there. At one point, we were referred to as the love child of a Black Star album and Cornel West, which is a really weird like way to... Oh, and Paulo Freire. A really weird way to describe us. But we love those kinds of reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Get with us. So what we do is I'll give you a cue, and you'll know what the cue is. And then all together, we're going to say stay dope. All right, so my name is Gerardo Munoz. On a wonderful Friday afternoon of renewal and excitement and just pride in these young people that I had the honor to assign seats to in my class at one point. And I'm encouraging you as you go into the weekend to remain justice-oriented, to stay focused on the things that matter, stay focused on your human relationships with your students. It matters more than anything else. And today, tomorrow, and always, to stay dope.
All
right.
I'm
you
so
missed
sorry.
The cue. It's
I
all good.